Thank you. Utpatayiti kātarāha Sukadeva Goswami continued, O Maharaj Parikit, when the Yamal Arjuna trees fell, all the cowherd men in the neighborhood, hearing the fierce sound and fearing thunderbolts, went to the spot. There they saw the fallen Yamal Arjuna trees on the ground, but they were a bit bewildered because they thought they could direct them. They were bewildered because even though they could directly perceive that the trees had fallen, they could not trace out the cause for their having done so. Report. Considering all the circumstances, had this been done by Krishna, he was standing on the spot, and his playmates described that this had been done by him. Had Krishna actually done this, or were these merely stories? This was a cause of bewilderment. Translation. Krishna was bound by the rope to the ulukala, the mortar, which he was dragging, but how could he have pulled down the trees? Who had actually done it? Where was the source for this incident? Considering all these astounding things, the cowherd men were doubtful and bewildered. Purport. The cowherd men were very much agitated because the child Krishna, after all, had been standing between the two trees. And if by chance the trees had fallen upon him, he would have been smashed. But he was standing as he was, and still the things had happened. So who had done all this? How could these events have happened in such a wonderful way? These considerations were some of the reasons they were agitated and bewildered. They thought, however, that by chance Krishna had been saved by God, so that nothing had happened to him. So now Sukadeva Goswami is describing the incidents that are surrounding the falling of the Yamala Arjuna trees with everybody else, how they came and everything like this. So we find this, it means if you're telling a story, you can't say everything at once, because the important thing of the story is to hear the rasa. It means the mood of it. What is going on in here? There's a attitude or something to taste from telling a story. Just like somebody would be telling one story and this happened to them, because it's in a particular mood, then immediately someone else will, you know, jump in and say, yeah, and this happened to me, and then they just keep going like this, and then as that changes the mood a little bit, the next thing they'll put on will be connected to that mood and will continue. So one is just going from one taste to another in the descriptions and discussions between people. So here, then, these cowherd men, they were coming rushing when they heard the sound. So it wasn't that they weren't coming before. But if suddenly means to go back and forth between them coming and then the description of Nalukuvera and Manigriva, then you wouldn't get a full, you know, taste of what is going on in these activities. So it's very important then is that you put the things accordingly is how they would be best presented so that the taste can properly be appreciated. So here we see is that the trees have fallen down, the brothers have come out, they have offered their prayers, they've been blessed by Krishna, and they've gone back to the heavenly planets. And so now, then we switch over to the scene where the cowherd men had come. Of course, they arrived at this time after the demigods had left, so it took them that long to get there. But otherwise it gets confusing. Otherwise, if you say, and then the cowherd men came rushing, and then these two personalities came out of the tree, and then you're thinking, well, what happened to the cowherd men? So you don't bother with that. You introduce that later. So this chapter then introduces this aspect of the pastime. Because there's so many aspects of the pastime. So before was Krishna, just his dealings with Nalakuvera and Manigriva. And now that's over. Now we go back to how the Brajbasis are going to perceive this, how they're going to deal with the situation. Otherwise, then you get a mix of these two rasas. Because Krishna's dealings with Nalakuvera and Manigriva, then those are not on the Braja level. They are, here he's dealing with them as the Supreme Lord, and they as his servants. You know, they're from the heavenly planets, they're demigods, they have portfolios, and they're not doing them. They're sitting around naked as trees. So very difficult to do your, you know, proper demigod duties. So now they've been released from that. Now they can go back to the heavenly planets. They can continue their duties. But now they have understood that rather than taking advantage of all these facilities in the heavenly planets and enjoying them, now we will use them as our medium of service to Krishna. So then that has been established now by this, up to this point. So now we switch over and see how the Brajbasis deal, right? Because taste comes in variety. So now we see variety, one of the pastimes, and also in the flavors. In this flavor before it was, these demigods come out of the tree, they see a little kid, right? He can't even, he's just crawling. And he's pulled over this tree, and it's not a problem that he's pulled over these trees, because he's God, right? And God also has his child pastimes. They've heard all these things. And so then for them it's no problem. Krishna pulled down the trees, Krishna's God. So they offer their prayers, they get their blessings, and then they go. But now we see a totally different picture, absolutely opposite picture. Krishna's pulled down these trees, he's standing there tied to this mortar, and between these two are Arjuna trees. Now they said that they've been here for 100 celestial years of the demigods. So that means 36,000 years. So we can imagine how big a tree gets if it stands in one place for 36,000 years. Right? Quite big. Right? Means we hear of these trees that are 5,000 years old in Southern California. And they're big enough that they've cut, you know, tunnels in them. You can drive cars through them. You know, the national highway goes right straight through one of the trees. Like that. So those are 5,000 years old. So you can imagine if they're 36,000 years old. So quite big. And not only that, these Arjuna trees have a very unique feature, is they look very nice and nice round trunks and very nice for a while. But once they get a little bit older, they develop these fins off of the trunk. So fins generally you see on trees that are very determined to stay upright, right? They're not willing to be blown over in the storms or washed away in water and stuff like that. Generally those kind of trees develop these fins. So these, and they're very big. They'll be, however big the trunk is, the fins are at least that wide. And then you have them on both sides. So the tree will be 3 to 4 or 5 times wider than what is the actual main trunk. So you take a 36,000-year-old tree, or two of them, and then you increase that base by, you know, 3, 4, 5 times. So that's the trees you're dealing with. And what's standing next to these trees is, you know, a little kid about this big, right? And so there's no problem for the demigods, because they know that this is happening. But the Brajabasis, it just doesn't add up. So they're disturbed, they're agitated, because something could have happened to Krishna. These monster trees fall over. Krishna could have got injured. And they're just going through this whole spat of all these people coming and making all this trouble for Krishna. All these demons coming, just one after another. So they're just thinking, you know, this is a disturbance. At the same time as then they see the trees have fallen over. And these are monster trees, so why would they have fallen over, Right? It's a cloudless day. There's not a breeze blowing. There's nothing happening. You know, there's no monster demons standing around there. You know, you don't have Aristasura there, you know, or anybody like that that stands as high as the clouds. Okay, they could have pushed over the trees. Nothing's there. All it is Krishna, his playmates, and a mortar. Right? And the mortar's wooden also. So it's not even like it's, you know, really, really a tough mortar. Just the mortar's there. So then, right? And a mortar means generally, I mean, just thinking about it now, you know, you think these trees are monster trees and they're some distance apart. But actually, if a mortar is going to get wedged in between them, how big's the mortar? Right? It means it has to be the height that a lady can grind things in. Does that make sense? So that means it can't be that tall. So it's going to be about the same size as Krishna. You know? Like 2-3 feet high, 4 feet high. It depends on what kind of mortar it is. Right? So then, that means those trees have to be right next to each other. And so if they're right next to each other, then the chance of them falling on Krishna is very great. So that would be very agitating for these men, because the mortar is there, Krishna is in between these two monster trees. So then they are bewildered by this. They're agitated by that fact. The obvious thing is Krishna's done it. But at the same time is because they're Vrajavasis, you know, kids don't do these things. Right? Maybe they do this in the heavenly planets. You know, Bharat Maharaj, when he was born, then by the time he was 3, you know, and he could walk around and that, then he'd go out and catch tigers and lions for fun and tie them up with, you know, vines from the, you know, the forest and tie them to trees, you know, so they don't go away too far, so you can come back and play with them. So maybe he did that, but he's the son of the emperor of the world. Okay, so but Krishna is just a cowherd boy, like that. So then there's a bewilderment because they're thinking, this couldn't be possible, right? It just is not possible. He's just a boy. And so then because he's a boy, then how would anything like this go on? So it doesn't cross their mind that he's God. Some have this doubt that, well, the prediction is there that that he is as good as Narayan. It's been foretold by Garga Muni. But he's not there, that doesn't register. He's just their child. Right? It's not even just he's Nanda Maharaj's boy, he's all of their child. All of them feel that he is their child. Right? That's the nature of parental rasa. Is that you don't have to yourself be in it to taste it. Right? You can taste it even though it's not a biological connection. Right? Because we only have one Nanda and one Yashoda, but all the cowherd men and all the cowherd women, the elder ones, are considered as parents of Krishna. They're all in parental rasa. Because they can appreciate the exchange. That's the important element, is that this is how the Brajbasis are able to appreciate pastimes that are performed in other leelas, in other avatars. Like that. They don't have any difficulty with it because for them it is tasting rasa. Right? It means if someone likes to eat honey, then all varieties of honey they appreciate. It's not that they only eat, you know, California orange honey, you know, they won't eat something else. No, they'll eat whatever is good. So we see is the relationship between Hanuman and Ramachandra is good. So they can hear it and appreciate. And they can enter into that rasa and appreciate what it is that Hanuman is feeling, what it is that Ramachandra is experiencing, that exchange between them. It's always appreciated. It's always considered nice, good. So they're happy with it. They don't think otherwise. So then we see here is therefore then the Brajabasis are able to appreciate that rasa with Krishna. Even though they are not directly the parents of Krishna. Right? And as we discussed before, for the pastimes to successfully go on, they don't even really think that they are, even Nanda and Yashoda, are the parents of Krishna. They do, but they don't. So that kind of aspect is there. So rasa is another thing. So here now they're tasting that this is something wonderful, something amazing, at the same time something dangerous for Krishna. So that combination of that then creates a bewilderment. And in that they're not seeing that Krishna would have done it. The cowherd boys, the children there, they are already saying, right? Means we'll see the next verse deals with that. But in the last verse also, it said even though they're saying it, that means as soon as they arrive there, the kids are going to immediately talk, right? The kids aren't going to sit there and soberly and, right, following very strictly the laws of Manu, that only if you're asked a question in a proper way, then, you know, by a proper person at a proper time, then you'll give an appropriate answer. No, children, as soon as it's exciting, right? Krishna's just pulled down these trees, made a huge sound, right? It doesn't matter. You know, you can take every pot in the house and push them over. You won't get as good a sound as what Krishna just got. And then after that, then these big, beautiful men came out of the trees, right? How often do you see men come out of trees? Let alone if they did come out, how many of them are beautiful, right? Like that, you know, I mean, you imagine you've been stuck in a tree for 36,000 years, you know, you maybe look a little bit draggled, right? You know, one night you get out of bed, you look terrible, right? So, let alone 36,000 years. These guys came out of the trees looking great, you know, so then so they got a lot to talk about. So then they go to, as soon as the coward men come, they'll go and say, wow, you know, Krishna pushed all these trees, these men came out of it, they were talking to Krishna, and they and this and that, and then all these things. And they're just going, you know, no. It doesn't make sense, right? Trees have fallen over. They can see if the kids had come home and said, yeah, we saw Krishna pull over these trees and that, yeah, okay. You know, it was nice, you know, like children. The children, what they means, how you say? Reality is what someone perceives of it. Right? That's the bottom line. Actual reality is what Krishna perceives. Right? And what Krishna's pure devotees perceive of what Krishna perceives. Right? Krishna perceives everything, every aspect. The devotees can perceive a certain aspect of it. But still, that's all according to Krishna's perception. Then you have what the individual soul then perceives of that, from the conditioned state. So if they're pious, then they all perceive it according to the scriptures, shastra chakshus, looking through the eyes of scriptures. And if they're not pious, then they'll necessarily, or not trained, then they'll perceive it in their own way, according to their own conditioning, their own background, like this. And so, to them, that is reality. Right? You can say it's something else, but that's what is a reality for a person. Because if you look at it, reality is not this. Reality is what you perceive of this. Right? If it's good, then reality is nice. If it's bad, then reality is not nice. So that's all. A bug comes along, it's a great table. It's made out of wood. You can eat on it you can eat this for years, right? You know? But, you know, you get something else, it's made out of plastic, the bug, this is terrible. This is useless, right? So, like that. Then it's your perception that makes it real or unreal. That's why the first shloka of Bhagavatam means material world's unreal. It exists. You can go up and touch it. But it's unreal because there's perception. Unless it's connected to Krishna, it's actually unreal. Perception actually doesn't have any substance because it's our perception. It's not what is the perception according to how Krishna's created it and means it to be used. It's our idea of what it is, right? You know, the thief goes in the store and he sees, you know, assets, you know, personal assets. It's just a matter of how many personal assets can he take away with him. And unfortunately, the people working in the store don't appreciate that the store is his. They have another strange perception on, you know, matter, that they have this illusion that what's in the shop belongs to them and is for their material gain. Right? And so now, what is better, the direct interpretation or indirect interpretation? Right? Direct is generally taken. For the thief, it's directly his. Right? But for the shop owner, it's not directly his. These are his stock that he'll sell, that he'll get money, and then buy what he'll call directly his. Right? So the thief, it's directly his. And for the other guy, it's three steps away. It's third-hand goods. Right? So naturally, the thief's perception should be counted as the main perception, right? The more realistic perception. Right? If you just take logic and, you know, some other, you know, thing. But God didn't create it that way. God created business that you have goods and then you sell and you make economic development. You take care of yourself, you give in charity, you pay tax. Right? And thievery is not allowed. Right? Thievery is considered wrong. So this is how God sees it. So then, that's how we have to look at it. Then it has reality. But otherwise, the thief thinks it's the other way, and he thinks it's just his work, real. He has a whole group of friends that are thieves, and they all have their own, you know, how you say, Dharma Shastra, you know, you don't steal from another thief, you know, you steal from the rich, give to the poor, they're the poor, so then they should be, you know, like that. So all these things, they have their own, you know, code of honor and everything. So then, these things are there. So perception then is very malleable. That's the difficulty. So unless you can root it in how Krishna sees it, it doesn't. It's illusory. That's the difficulty. So now here we're dealing with that we've gone beyond reality. Means you have the so-called reality here. Then we clear that illusion, then we get what's the real reality. This is all Brahman, right? This is all made of Krishna's energy. And then this is supposed to be used for Krishna. Then you go beyond that, and again, then it goes into transcendental seeming illusion. Is that they don't see it again as Krishna's energy. They just see it in relationship on paraphernalia to engage in Krishna's service. So it's the same as here. Here, I have this matter, I engage it in Krishna's service. Right? And there, they have this spiritual matter, and they engage it in Krishna's service. In between, then you see, yes, this is Brahman, and everything's transcendental, and, you know, and this, and we're in illusion that we think, and all these different platforms like this. That's all in between. So they're used to get us beyond this, to what is the transcendental platform of rasa. But the Brajavasis, they are already on that platform. So to them, this is very bewildering. Is that, you know, he's just a kid. They have great affection for him. Because of that affection, he could have died when these trees fell over, gotten injured, you know, so that they're agitated by that. They're bewildered. How could these trees have fallen? And all. So then that's the state that they're in. So then Krishna gets to taste this, right? This is more tasty. Right? He's there, he's God, you know, the Nalaku Vari Mani Griva, oh, you're the Supreme Lord, we surrender to you. Nice, you know, at least they understand what's going on. And, you know, some surrender's there. So that's nice. But more nice is out of affection, you know, that's out of fear, out of respect. This is out of affection that they don't even consider, you know? They just go beyond it, you know, so it's fun. It's fun. They get more enjoyment out of that. So Krishna feels that this is a better platform. And so therefore, that is home. Right? Vrindavan is home. And then Vaikuntha and the heavenly, this is all the office and, you know, outings, right? You go from Vaikuntha and you take an outing, you know, a field trip out to see, you know, what's happening amongst the commoners, you know, like that in the material world, you know, then you meet the demigods and that. Then you have the flora and fauna, the various species of life, you know, after that, they're managing. So for Krishna, then this is very tasty that all this has happened. It's obvious he knocked the trees over, but at the same time, as a good affection, they can't accept that. They just think this is strange. This can't be like this. Like that. So Krishna's having good fun. Any questions on this or comments?
You can imagine how big hole was there after the trees.
Oh, how big a hole. Well, it says that the trees broke like that, because if they were just uprooted, then let's see. No, it says the trees fell down here. This said fell down. Tyria, dragging. They'd have to check. But yeah, they either made a big hole and they broke, or whatever it is, but it would have been very big to make a sound like thunder. And if thunder is in the distance, it's pleasant. But if thunder is right on your head, then it's very jarring. So they thought this was right on their head. Therefore, they came to see what was it. Because there's no clouds, there wasn't a thunder, bolt. So then they can't say what was there. So they just went in the direction of the sound to see what had happened.
It would be quite surprising to stand in front of a big pole and fish on the other side.
Yeah.
Trees on the other side also.
Which thing is more real to Krishna, the Vaikuntha reality where he is God, or is he covered boiling down?
Which is the most real to Krishna? Yeah. Vaikuntha or Vrindavan? Vrindavan, that's where the taste. Because, reality is taste. Right? We've become very dry and impersonal by taking fact or number as the taste. So it itself has a taste. It has a taste of knowledge. Oh, I know it's like this and that. But in reality, that's not where the taste is. Applied taste is not intellectual. That's the whole point. You can know all about it, but it's the act of doing it and the results of it that you get the taste from. Right? Knowledge is a platform from which you act. Knowledge is a platform in which you move towards your goal. But the knowledge is not the taste. So that's why the modern culture is so dry and people are so disturbed. Because where's the taste? Because for them, everything has to be calculatable. It has to be able to be broken down into something you can measure. And so because of measurement, measurement has a taste. If you go out and take a ruler and measure things and that, it has some interest. But it's, what does it do for you? Okay, you've measured everything. The kid got a ruler and measured everything in the house. Okay, great. Now what? What do you do with it? So it's very nice to know all these things. But it's the result of that knowledge that's important. So even though it's a taste, it's a lower taste, right? You know the whole science of, okay, then when you take the milk and you mix it with, some flour and you put some this and that, and then, you because of the striking of flints on another flint, it creates a spark, and that spark is fire, so when fire touches gas then ignites. And because it's moving at a certain speed, velocity, coming out of a bunch of holes, therefore, then there's no backburn, and then your whole gas pipe and tank don't blow up. Okay, and then you put on that, then a pan, and because of the transference of energy, from one to the other, then, and depending upon the material that you're using, then you'll get a different transference if you're using, some stainless steel, then this exact spot where the flame touches, then you're going to get heat, and the other places are going to be not so hot. And then if you use something else, like aluminum, or you use copper, then it will spread more, or even better, is silver. Then it will get a more even thing. That way, then when you take then this batter, that when you pick it up, because of the liquid nature, then when it is poured at an angle, then it will drop at a particular trajectory due to the influence of gravity. And by this gravity, then things will hit. And because of that and the weight, because there is also in gravity, you have to consider weight and volume. So then the batter, it won't just stay in a ball. It will push down on itself. And so then since it can't go farther down, by nature, since the same energy that has been given, then by Newton's law must be affected on the plate itself, on the cooking surface. So then the batter must go in the different directions. Now, of course, you do have levels here that you have to consider. So if the pan's not level, it will only go to one side or like that. If it's level, it will go all the way around. So like this, you can go on and analyze every aspect of cooking a pancake. You know, but what do you get out of it? Right? The point is when the pancake's cooked, been offered, you're sitting down, you're eating it, then you get a taste. But in all this, it's nice. It's intellectually nice to know. Why is it nice to know? The real reason is not the knowledge. Is then I feel I have control over the subject by having knowledge of it. That's why the modern situation, if I have the knowledge, I feel I have control. I don't have knowledge, I don't have control. Ignorance means I can be exploited. It means I'll be enjoying. But if I have knowledge, then I will be the enjoyer because I have control. Right? So that's why there's always the thing is that when, you know, in your magazine, a news article comes out of some latest scientific discovery, everybody very happily reads it and thinks, yes, I've been, you know, my mind has been improved and expanded by this, simply because then I feel I have more control over the material energy. But otherwise, what's the use of it? Oh, it was nice, an interesting tidbit. Okay, you know, it lasted for an intellectual taste of about, you know, 3.5 seconds. Okay, now it's over. Now what do I do with it? Nothing. You know? So it doesn't have any substance as far as rasa goes. Right? Very minimal. While cooking for somebody, eating, serving, you know, discussing, afterwards remembering, you can take that one, even though how long did it take you to eat? You know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. But that can be appreciated for many, many hours, even throughout a lifetime. You can still remember, yeah, I remember back when I was a kid, we used to get this preparation, it was so nice, and me and my friends, we'd go and sit here and do that, and, you know, all these different things. And they can discuss about it and get some taste out of it, you know? It's just like somebody, the boys in the Gurukul, right? They go to the West, right? And then when they get together, then what do? They get out a gumsha, put it on the floor, get a bunch of puffed rice, put it in there, put different things in there, get out the mustard oil, you know, and that. So even though they're sitting in America, they're still eating their maslamuri off of the gumsha. Right? It has to be a gumsha, like that. It does not give the right flavor off of a plate. I'm sorry, like that. Only thing that is more, let's say, ethnic than the gumsha, you know, but only the most intimate can appreciate this, is a bucket. Yeah. Not a new bucket, not a kitchen bucket, it has to be one of the clothes buckets. Of course you wash it out nicely, you know, and dry it, but you have to dry it with that gumsha. So the gumsha gives that, you know, aroma, and then plus coupled with the bucket and the rasa, because the thing in the bucket is it's more intimate, because you can put it and two people can sit closer to each other to eat out of it, you know, kind of like that. But the gumshoe, you do have to sit back a little ways and be more careful, right? Because things will fall on the floor. The bucket, it doesn't matter. What you pick up, it can fall back in the bucket. It's like, you know, there's some special ras there. So that can be appreciated. They can sit anywhere in the world, discuss it, and you can appreciate it, right? You know, like we're discussing this, everybody's smiling. When I was describing the science of cooking a pancake, we didn't even finish. And everybody's bored stiff, right? Like that. So that's the difference. And if I started that again, it's kind of like, okay, we already heard that clever, you know, how you say, what do you call it? You know, presentation in the class to create an effect, you know, or let's hear something else. But if we describe it in a different time, more nuances of the, you know, muscle moody on the gumption and buckets, we'd probably be interested to hear, you know, like that. You know, there's so many other sciences, what goes in there, you know, samosas, but not fresh samosas, they gotta be old samosas, right? Like that. You know, all these different things are there, you know. The mustard oil shouldn't be fresh out of the can, it's gotta be from the bottle that you use, you know, when you take your bath. You know, all these things are important to know, you know, like that. Yes? No? Exactly. So then, okay. So like this, it has taste. So that's the point, is application. And the result of application is what has the taste, not the knowledge. Therefore, the application of devotional service, that was has taste. Not knowledge. Not the knowledge, he's God, I'm your servant, and this and that, and you're the greatest and most glorious and that. It's nice, it has a taste. But what's tasty is that they're offering prayer, they're making sense. In other words, they're still doing an activity. But the knowledge itself doesn't have a taste. God already knows He's God. He doesn't have to, you know, if I come up and I start telling you who you are, and, you know, you're wearing a black shirt, you know, and it's got three-quarter sleeves, and, you know, you got on a saffron, you know, you got a saffron bead bag with a zipper on the side, and, you know, you got some nice counter beads, and a white flower behind your ear, and, you know, centered T-lock on your nose, and, you know, nice or not so great, right? You know, and then how many, and then you're going to hear this all day? Right? You know, the next guy will come along, wow, you know, you got a black shirt, you got this, and then you're going to go, let me out of here, let me out of here. You know? So, you know, then you go to the material world for a break, you know? Because then they don't know your God, right? Nobody says all these things, you know? Jar of Sun, he's a schmutz, you know? Something like that. Shishupal, yeah, you know, we don't even know what he is, what Varna is, you know? One day he's a coward boy, one day he's a kshatriya, one day he's this, you know, then he's driving a chariot, you know? It's like, you know, there's more fun. Like that. Because he already is the big man. He doesn't want to prove, he doesn't have to prove himself, right? That's the point. He is God, and He knows it. Right? So it's not that you have to tell Him. Right? So then He has fun just having fun. For Him, everything that He does is just having a good time. Right? He's just having a good time watching the rasa that's going on. So for Him, that's what's important. So of the rasas, then your Vrindavan will be the most intense of all, most intense, most deep of all rasas. So for Him, that's more important. Because even here, the materialist is doing it for rasa. The Vaikuntha Vasis are doing it for rasa. Right? But they only know that much. And Krishna knows it all. So for Him, Braja is the most important. Does that make any sense? Oh, one with a flower behind you. Yes. Yes.
I have an interesting question here. So it is there's a living entity worshiping the Lord Vaikuntha, there is Goloka Vrindavan. So there is a chance of making, I would say, spiritual progress. Everything that is spiritual. But progress. Like say one day in Vaikuntha said, oh, I should be Goloka Vrindavan, so I want to progress to that rasa there. Because here we are completely ignorant, and then we progress into the highest, which is the Vaikuntha, you know, or the Goloka Vrindavan consciousness. So we as a karmi, you know, as an jivas conditioned, we can progress. What about the spiritual jivas, you know, liberating the spiritual world? Can they progress from, let's say, the Vaikuntha Vrindavan, progressing more and more and go to, like, you know, this desire to progress is there?
Yeah. See, the progress, that desire, is coming from trying to gain more. And progressive means going from something of less quality to something of more quality. Otherwise, it's not considered progress. So we see it's a matter of time and space. So progress is actually a consideration of the material world. From the liberated platform, it's already perfect. It's already eternal. And it just becomes more eternal. You know, perfect, more perfect. It's just every moment getting better and better. You know, like this. So there's no, it's not a matter of progressing to something else. Whatever is there, it's already perfect. So there's no need to go somewhere else. So here, it's that you're going from ignorance to knowledge, and from knowledge to devotion. But once you get to devotion, then it's already perfect. So then there's no need to go further. It has its natural forms in which it expands. But it's not that what the point where one was, it's left. You know what I'm saying? So it's a consideration of this world, just like Prabhupada makes a comment in the second canto, that the impersonal perception and the perception of the supersoul, these are perceptions from the material world. They're not there in the spiritual world. Bhagavan and Paramatma realization aren't in the spiritual world. There is only Bhagavan realization. these two realizations are realizations of the material world, of people of the material world. They're not spiritual as such. It means they are progressive. It means you're going from atheist or we're God to Krishna's God. But once you get to there, everything's perfect. So in between, then there's I'm not God, I'm Brahman, then there's the Lord is there, then he's entered into everything, and then there's the personal relationship.
In other words, in the Vaikuntha relationship, there's no idea about, I may want to taste, I will look for relationship.
No, it means they already tasted, but they're on their standard. No, it means by being in Vaikuntha, they already taste the Vrindavan pastimes, in that Vaikunthapati has unlimited pastimes. And some of those pastimes are his Vrindavan Leela. And so much of the time, the discussion and prayers and songs will all be about his Vrindavan Leela, even in Vaikuntha. But it's our Lord is so great that he has these wonderful, sweet pastimes. You know, he has pastimes where he's God, where he's the establisher of Dharma, where he is the benefactor of his devotee, you know, he's the uplifter of the fallen, and he has these sweet pastimes with his devotees. So it's just one more in the whole unlimited wonderfulness of Vaikuntha. It's not an exclusive, it's the Aishwarya is the taste, and the servitor is the taste. But as a servant, you could taste formality with the master, you could taste intimacy with the master, you could teach, you could taste friendship. You get so many different tastes are there. So they're just varieties within that same taste of servitorship. So what the Brajvasis are tasting, that they don't taste. They taste part of it. But to the limit of that, and for them that's perfect. They're, it is perfection, so they're satisfied. You know, that's all. You know, it's just like when you eat something. One person likes one preparation, another one likes another, prefers another. So you could say, well, don't you want to taste the one I'm eating? It's like, no, I'm happy with the one I have. And even if you taste it, you know, it's nice, yeah, it's good, but I like this one better. So they taste Vrindavan pastimes, but they prefer the Vaikuntha mood better. Does that make some sense? Yes. Where did who go? No, who
demigods.
Went? Oh, where did the demigods go? They went back to their positions. In the heavenly planets. They went to the because they're sons of Kuvera. They just went back there. Says, O Nalakuvera and Manigriva, now you may both return home. Since you desire to be always absorbed in my devotional service, your desire to develop love and affection for me will be fulfilled, and now you will never fall from that platform. Right? So that's the end of the last chapter. So they went back to the heavenly planet. They have a job to do. They have work. They got to go back to the office. Right? That was how, I think it's probably mentioned. I think it was a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, German or something. And he became a devotee of Krishna because he studied all the demigods, everybody, and what was their power and position and authority and the hierarchy. And then in that, he's studying Krishna. It's like everybody else has work to do. They have duties to do. They're obliged. And this guy has nothing to do. You know, he just does whatever he wants and just has a great time. So he must be God, because he's got everybody else's working for him. Because in the material world, you have to work. The demigods have to work, but this guy doesn't work. So he must be God. So this way then he surrendered to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. Does that make sense?
In order for Krishna to fully taste Vrindavan Rasa, what is the reality of his perception? Does he actually sometimes forget that he's God? Like it says that he runs in fear of one of the children. So is that actual fear, or is he just pretending?
Yeah. Okay, so Krishna is... Krishna's reality. So then there's two. One is that is called Mugdata, and the other is called Sarvagya. So Sarvagya means he knows everything, every atom in the whole cosmic creation. Every atom in between every atom. He knows everything. So that's Sarvagya, fully conscious of everything. Mugdata means he puts himself under the yoga maya. So even he doesn't know what's going on. So it's a front. So even though he gives, yoga maya is his power. But he agrees to come under the control of that. So she knows, being his power, she's Surup Shakti. She knows what he wants. So then she creates in a very amazing way variety, you know, on a standard, you know, that's good for him, you know, up to his standard. Then all the variety of the pastime. So even he's amazed. But if he wants to know, he knows. Like that. But it's not a problem. It's not a problem. Because if we offer prayers and that, he hears those prayers. Even though he's Mugdata, he's also serving. Yeah. Simultaneous. But in the pastime, he's Mugdata. But for things outside the pastime, he's serving. Yeah, he knows what's going on. So he's God. He can do that. You know, it's just like you can do your work and think of things at home. You know, so in the same way as Krishna can do all of that at once. He can be completely absorbed in the mood, right? And at the same time, he can think of these other things. So like that. Yes. So basically that Mugdata you only find in Goloka. Like that. Vaikuntha, it's only Sarvagya. But by in Goloka, then it starts, you know? It's mixed in Dwarka. But in Braj, it's completely...
So what is the special reason by which he has to offer his position, let's say, as Supreme Personality of God, the Lord of all things, and put himself under that Yoga Maya? What is the special reason? Why does that? I mean...
Why does he do that?
Yeah. Just like, you know, a famous actor, you know, he sometimes disguises himself and be a normal person, go out there in the crowd, or a king sometimes, I think our Brahma sometimes, you know, used to do that, the king used to do that.
The king would always do that. They have to do that.
What is the special reason why they do that?
Why? Because of taste. You like variety. I mean, let's say you like a particular preparation. Okay, let's eat it 3 times a day, 365 days a year. Great? No. I mean, one of the best ways I ever saw someone cured of theft was using this process. Right? One kid went in the go-down, stole a bunch of bananas. Okay. So then the go-down in charge thought, oh, okay, you like bananas, huh? Yeah. Okay. Then all you're going to get is bananas to eat. And in the beginning, the kid thought, great, I love bananas. But, you know, by lunchtime, you know, breakfast was as much as he wanted. How many bananas you want? You know, breakfast, banana. That lunch, yes, some bananas. Evening, I wanted to. Then next morning, breakfast. Okay, here's your bananas. So that went on for 3 days. So the guy went bananas, right? So he didn't steal anymore after that. Because point is, this variety is where taste is. That's one aspect. The other aspect is, as we meant before, knowledge, what is the taste? Right? Okay. The guy's a celebrity. You said a big celebrity. He knows it. It's obvious. So what does he need thousands of people to tell him, oh, you're so great? You know what I'm saying? How many times can you hear that? You know, how many times? Oh, one with the flower behind his ear. No more, no more. So, you know, how what's the taste in it? For us, it's an interesting taste because we want to be the controller. So then the question comes, why would anybody give up the taste of being the controller. Not only the controller, the supreme controller. I'm trying to get control of my life, or even parts of my life, I'd be happy, right? You know, if I could just, you know, walk from point A to point B in this amount of time that I projected I should be able to do it without running into somebody who, you know, I haven't seen in 20 years, or, you know, somebody who's got something else to say, or a bunch of mud, or, you know, they're doing some work and I got to walk around. And I'd be happy just to be able to do that, let alone get complete control of my life, let alone be control of everybody's life, you know. So then the question comes, why would anybody want to give that up? But the point is where's the taste? To control is only there to enjoy. Right? The guy is the emperor of the world. Everybody comes to him and does everything, but who cares? He's got to hear it from some lady in the back room that nobody sees, that she tells him he's nice. Then he's nice. And when she says, you know, she's disappointed, how come you're late? He's just been managing the world. You know, you're late. You know, he's afraid. So the attachment is the focus. Control is only to deal with attachment. You don't control it, you can't enjoy it. Right? You don't have the samosa in your hand. You don't get it in your mouth. Right? If the samosa is behind a piece of glass, you know, and your mouth is on this side, you don't enjoy that samosa. You have to get it, control of it in your hand, and you got to get it in your mouth, right? You know, if someone's a, you know, what is it, paraplegic or something, you know, it goes in their ear, or, you know, so you still can't enjoy it. Okay, you know, it's warm and it's oily, you know, may feel nice in the side of the face, but, you know, the taste of putting it in your mouth is much greater. So the more control you have, the more you can enjoy. Right? Intimacy means you have more control over the other person. Or you allow more control over you. That's intimacy. Is you relinquish some of your control to their control. And you gain some control from them. Does that make sense? So in the material world, you know, you're talking high grade religious, at top level is 50-50. Right? Spiritual world is 100%. 100% surrendered by Krishna, 100% surrendered by the devotee. Therefore, that pleasure is in another category. Here it's 50-50. At best, we're talking first class, you know, textbook, you know, like that, according to the Shastra, 50-50. So the taste is that enjoyment of the relationship. So the control is not what's interesting. Right? You know, it's like, what is it? How do you say? Yeah. Does that make sense? Yes, no. Yes, no. No. Doesn't make sense.
There must be some taste and control.
There is some taste and control, but then once you've gotten control, then you want somebody to tell you that it's nice and somebody that you can get some other thing. Means here. Means. You have, probably gives the example of, I think it was in England or something, or in India, some big person, the viceroy or something like that, or some huge, you know, who it was?
Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister in England. Yeah, so then the Prime Minister, he had some very big person wanted to see him. And he was told to wait. And he was waiting. And nothing was happening. He got impatient. He went, walked into the guy's room. There he is on the floor, on his hands and knees with his grandchild on his back. And the grandchild saying, yeah, take me here, now go over there, giddy up, horsey, and all that. So that was more taste than dealing with the affairs of state. You know, and in those days, affairs of state meant the world, right? Those days, the sun never set, you know, on the... But, I think I changed the song or something. It never rises, you know.
For example, instead of taste,
in
control, also the taste in releasing control.
In surrender, yes. But that surrender is only there if relationship is appreciated. If surrender is there without relationship, then it's called exploitation. If surrender is there in relationship, then it's considered rasa. That's true. Yeah, yeah. That's it. It doesn't
seem fragrant.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's not that. The comment was is that he was saying that it's not actually that Krishna is giving. If you look at tattva, the knowledge aspect, Krishna doesn't relinquish control. He is still in control. But at the same time, as he relinquishes, you know, knowingly relinquishes, I mean, how you say, consciously relinquishes control so that he can taste other tastes, but actually he's still in control.
By that answer, you cannot give up control because he's God. You just can't.
God can't give up control because he's God. He has to run the place, but because he's God, he can. That's the point. It's simultaneously one and different. He is means whatever there is, it's him. So you can say, well, that's contradictory, but that's God. You know? That's the way it is. You know, a chutney is contradictory, but it exists. You know? You know what I'm saying?
Everybody is still his servant because by...
That's tattva, there, but that's tattva. But in rasa, he can do it. That's the point. The Prabhupada said, well, if he's God, can he make a mountain that's bigger than he can lift? And he said, yes. Then he can lift it. Prabhupada said, he can create a mountain that's bigger than what he can lift, and then he can lift it. It just depends. And Mugdatta, he can't lift it. But if he wants, he can lift it. So that's the whole thing, depending upon what he wants. That's the bottom line. He can do what he wants. So it's like this. Who wouldn't want to align themselves with such a person? Right? We're attracted to people in this world because of opulence. Right? The opulence of some ability, some quality. You know? So that's someone who has one or two or a few. But here is who has all the opulences in unlimited. So why you wouldn't want to put yourself in line with that person? So if it's nice talking to people of this world that have a little quality, or you feel you can gain more from them, or you can be protected better by them, so why one wouldn't enjoy more, be protected more, and gain more from the person who's got it all? The structure has a taste, but more taste is when it's freed of that structure. But the structure remains. Does that make sense? So it's also a simultaneous. Just like you can have a formal teacher-student relationship. That's nice. More important and deeper is an informal relationship between teacher and student. So technically there are no boundaries. But at the same time, as the student has to know and the teacher has to know, where is the boundary? So by rasa, it's never crossed. But externally, you don't see the form. So the student never crosses the mood of student, the teacher never crosses the teacher. So the intimacy is greater. So you can get into more finer detail in the teaching process. But it has to be, you have to know where the line is. So in the same way, as even though it's spontaneous, one has to know what is rasa bhas. One can't cross great rasa. That's anything else? Or? Yes?
When you hear these pastimes from the Bhagavad Gita and so on, the way you explain it, it sounds almost like it's boring in Vaishnavism.
Now you're starting to understand. Yeah.
Is there any chance, like, say, when I am some far out in the future, become devoted to that, could end up in my country? I don't want to go there. I want to go there.
Means.
What if I end up there?
Means one goes, one won't, will all it means. One doesn't have to worry that one wants to go to Vrindavan, one will end up in Vaikuntha. So, because where one wants to go, that's where one will go. But the main thing is you have to know where you want to go. Right? you know, say, yeah, I want to go back to Godhead. Yeah, okay. But then what does that mean? Like, you know, yeah, I can't wait to get out of here. These devotees drive me nuts, you know? Right? I've heard that one. You know, go back to the spiritual world. So it's, yeah, but it, you think you're going nuts here, right? You 700 devotees here in Mayapur. There's unlimited. There's millions and billions of them. What are you going to do there? You know? So then it's like, they only want to go to the Brahman. Because they have a problem. They want to solve the problem. So they know if you go back to Godhead, then material problems are solved. But actually, that's only the perfection aspect of Gaudiya Prema. So that only takes you up to the Brahman level. So actually, it won't take you into the pastimes. So like that, one has to be actually aware of where one's going. So one knows, okay, the material world's out of it, I don't want to go to Vaikuntha, but where am I going in Vrindavan? Or where am I going in Goloka? You know, that one has to know. So the general is, you have to catch the mood. It's not specific, oh, you know, yes, I want to be this cowherd boy, and I kind of like green, and I'd like to be wearing green, and you know, and if you're too big, you know, then you got to do all the work. You know, you got to stand around with bows and arrows and clubs and protect Krishna and all that. You don't get to, you know, have the fun. But if you're too small, you don't take it seriously. So, you know, then, you know, something in the middle there. You know, all these things of time and space and prestige and enjoyment and this and that, that won't work. But there's the mood of full surrender. That is what we invite. So if that is the desire, that's the direction, that will then take you to Vrindavan. Right? And as you get there, it will be revealed. Like if you're here and you don't know what, you know, Buckingham Palace looks like, you know, but if, you know, you're standing in Hyde Park, you can get a pretty good idea. You know, so the closer you get, the more you understand. So it's not a matter of, well, unless you tell me everything about, you know, Buckingham Palace, I'm not going to be able to get there. No, you have to, means Buckingham Palace is northwest from here. But don't mind, you're going to go east. You're going to go, which way? You're going to go north, then you're going to go east, then you're going to go south. Right? Then after that, you're going to go. So what you have to know what looks like, you have to know what the car you're supposed to get into looks like, not Buckingham Palace. Then, after that, you have to know what an airport looks like, what a door looks like, what a counter looks like, you know. You have to know all that. And then, once you get to there, then you can get close. So there's a process. So you don't have to know all the details are there. You have to know, what do I have to know right now? Right? You have to know where you're going. Otherwise, when you get there, you know, you're standing in Hyde Park and, well, I'm supposed to look at something here. I don't remember. Some place, wasn't it? Some place? Some Birmingham place or something? Oh, Birmingham. Birmingham. So, you know, it's like you have to know where you're going, but it's not that unless you know all fine details, then you don't really get there. Does that make some sense? So that's the problem. That's the sahaja tendency is, if I know all that, then I'm there. Because if I have the knowledge, I'm in control of it. I can enjoy it. So the sahaja is, get that knowledge, try to enjoy it. But it's not appreciated. It's, no one cares. Is that okay? Yes, last question.
I thought everybody has already established a relationship with Krishna.
Uh-huh.
And as we become purified, that becomes aware of what you're coming. It's not like you can choose God or this is that. But that is there.
Uh-huh.
And as we become purified, that becomes a real place.
Yes.
Whether we have a way of grass or passion.
So the point is that, you know, it's understood that we already have an eternal relationship. So why is it we have to, you know, have some direction or like that? Because it's just like this. Let's say, okay, the class is over now. Where are you going to go? Yeah, but that means because you know, yeah, but where breakfast? You're going to walk over to the Brahmacharya Ashram here and take breakfast? Or, you know, you're going to go out the front gate and drop into one of the shops out there and eat breakfast, or where are you going to eat breakfast? Right? It means at your home, because you know where your home is. Then you're going to go. If you don't know where your home is, I'm supposed to go home for breakfast, but I don't know where home is, then you're not going to make it. So until goal is knowledge is there, goal can't be established. And once those two are in place, right, then you have a straight line, right? Straight, you know, what is it? A line is the shortest distance between two points. But unless you know two points, you can't draw a line. So the endeavor is only there when you know who you are and where you're going. Then you progress. So that's why that knowledge must be there. Sambandha Gyan must be there. Relationship must be there. Because relationship means that sets your goal. And therefore then sets your process. So that's why. So even though it's known, but unless you have a general idea, you don't, which way do you go? I mean, you got hell on this side, you got creamy Bojan over here, and then you got Vraja Vrindavan on this side, and then you got a lot of things in between. You know? So unless you know where's your stop, then you know the bus goes the full route. You know. Is that okay? What if our home is Vaikuntha and we're trying to go to Vrindavan? It means if you get a taste for the higher taste, you can't move. But if you're rooted in that taste of Vaikuntha, you'll appreciate it and won't go. Like Narad Muni can go and visit Vrindavan and that, but he, Vaikuntha is his place. You know, he's a very unique personality who can taste all the realms. It means there's not a realm that he doesn't know, but he's situated in Vaikuntha. So that's a unique position. But you can move up from that, but from here. But once you've established yourself, then there's no interest. Like you see, those who are already established in their relationship, then there's no interest to go to a different relationship. They can add to that relationship in different pastimes. You know, it's just like Murari Gupta, as an example. Then he was a devotee of Ramachandra. But he can appreciate the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he can't leave Ramachandra for Krishna. So he can worship Chaitanya, but he can't give up Ramachandra. You know? So like that, but he's already established, so he's already on the transcendental platform. But in going to the transcendental platform, if you come across something there and it attracts you, then you can move in that direction.
So then when we're conditioned, it's not established?
It's established, but you're not taking advantage of it. You know? But you won't go to something less. You know? Generally the thing is you'll always go to whatever is your position. The point is the option is there, you could, but generally no one does. Because you're satisfied. Why you change? You're satisfied. Right? You
know? So then anyone in Islam would have a relationship in
generally speaking. Like Prabhupada says, the purpose of this movement is to get one into the Vraj pastimes. That's the purpose of this movement. He mentions it here and there, very rarely, he says it. But others who are not Gaudiyas can get great benefit even in their own line from us. Bhakti Vinod Thakur mentions that the quoting Jiva Goswami, I think that, Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya says that all the Sampradayas will be able to find their conclusions in our Sampradaya. So things that bewilder them, we can explain. Because their philosophy is just very straight. So the subtleties of incongruity, spiritual incongruity, is not there in the other four Sampradayas. But we deal with them. Because we're dealing with Krishna, Vraja Krishna. So he is everything. So that means all contradictory things have to be there in him. So we can explain on their level. You know, there's nothing below our level we can't explain. Like that. So therefore we can make them more fixed in their own determination than they might be able to themselves. by pointing out more and more relevant, deeper, and more esoteric understandings of their own philosophy. Like that. So everybody can benefit from Lord Chaitanya. And others then, who are already situated, then they will see, they'll appreciate Lord Chaitanya, because he is the Yuga avatar, so that they can't get around. Shastras mention that. But they will see him, they'll only see the Vaikuntha aspect. So, because he's Swayam Krishna, then he will only reciprocate with them as Vaikunthapati. So those aspects of his personality that are manifest on the Vaikuntha platform, he'll reciprocate with that only. He won't reciprocate on his braj level. You know, the rasa wise. So even though the pastime is there, it'll be seen differently.
This means the other sampradayas.
Yeah, other sampradayas. So they could come, be with us, and they would they could progress in their own. They could come, take part in our program, and progress in their own determination, probably more rapidly, because our path is faster, especially if they're madhvas. Madhvas, you don't go back to Godhead one lifetime. It's a whole rigmarole. From here you go to this place, from there that place. Finally, after many lifetimes, you make the Brahma's planet, and then when Brahma leaves the end of the universe, then you go to Vaikuntha with him. Because he's head of the Sampradaya. So you're not going to go if he's here. Right? So they work like that. Shris, you could do it in one lifetime, but you know, it's expected it may take a few. But with us, it's just, it's not worth it. It's too dangerous. One lifetime, get out of here. Who? The other samurais, they go to Vrindavan or Vaikuntha. They go to Vaikuntha. They don't go to Vrindavan. Oh, means Nimbarkas, they'll go to Vrindavan, but Ananda Vrindavan, not Vraja Vrindavan. And the Vallabhas, then they'll go to Vrindavan, but I'm not exactly sure, means their parental rasa. So exactly which level of Vrindavan they, I'm not sure. I haven't got into it that much to know what's their mood like that. Because only if there's mood of separation, then it'll come into all breath. And if there's no separation, you know, other than that he just goes out to the fields, but other than that, if that's not emphasized, then it may be another form like that. Because there's so many forms of Vrindavan. That's why Prabhupada's saying just stick to what we're doing. Because devotees go off and meddle in all these other affairs, but they don't know what they're meddling with. You know. They go, you know, they don't, there's difference. You have a general idea where you're going. We know that we're going to Goloka Vrindavan. That much we know. So then we move, and as we get closer to Goloka Vrindavan, then it will become more and more clear. As the example I was giving before, the closer you get to your desired destination, then the form of it you see in the distance, and then more detail, and like that.
Just that road is Vrindavan at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that we can't say, you know, like that. It means as time goes, then it becomes more and more clear, like that. So when one comes to the platform of Baba, then it's very clear, you know. Then it's a matter of clearing the attitudes of material conditioning until one comes to prema, and then like that, it goes. Yes.
And now we do not, right?
Yeah.
That's we are servants. Mm-hmm. That's eternal. That doesn't change.
Yeah.
How we approach that would actually change which way we're serving.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Zamani Vasa made the point is that we already know the principle, the fundamental. That's the point that we always make, is that principle always works. And the principle is the simplest, most direct thing. Is that we already know that we're serving the Krishna. Jivir Surupai Krishna Nityadas. That Lord Chaitanya says that's there. So it doesn't matter where you are in the material world, from, you know, from the Indra Gopa, you know, up to Brahma, to Vaikuntha, to Goloka, then they're all service of Krishna. So now it's just a matter of realizing that, and then what is the flavor of service in that. So that, so that's the first thing. One can completely turn around one's life by simply understanding that point. I am servant of Krishna. Krishna is God, I am his servant. You know, we have an eternal relationship. The goal of that relationship is prema. And the process for exercising that relationship is service. That anyone, any sampradaya, can appreciate. And it's the essence of anybody's philosophy. And if one understands that, then everything else in Krishna consciousness will fall into place. If one doesn't understand these three, one will run into a difficulty in that area where the understanding is complete. Okay. So I think we should end here. So Dantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Prabhupada Ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki, Jaya Nairobha Vipenda.
The most is our motive that I have knowledge of. What is the word? The penalty is the word of the Lord.